Okay, tonight's daf, or tomorrow's daf, is Maseches Avodah Zarah, daf Chaf Hey. So we left off today, this morning, on daf Chaf Dalet of Beis. I'm so not used to using these terms, this morning as opposed to yesterday. We left off this morning on daf Chaf Dalet of Beis. We left off at the two dots on daf Chaf Dalet of Beis. The Yisharna HaParos B'derech, it's about 20 lines before the end of the page. First one line is Kiddushanin. So really, what the Gemara was talking about was whether a Parah Aduma is allowed to be purchased from a non-Jew. That was yesterday's discussion. Then we discussed in general Karbanos, whether they're allowed to be purchased from a non-Jew. And now we're just going to go off on a little bit of Agadata, and a little bit of sort of related to Parah, but not so related to the Avodah Zarah discussions on Daf Chaf Dalet Amud Beis. So says the Gemara. But the Gemara quotes a Pasuk from Shmuel Aleph, where the pasuk says, "Vayisharna haparos baderech al derech beis shemesh b'mesila achas holchu haloch v'gaov lo soru yaminu smol." That the paros were going and they were traveling and they didn't, and as they were walking, they didn't turn one way or the other to the right or to the left. V'sarnei plishtim holchem achreiam ad gvul beis shemesh. And essentially, this is the story that we remember in Navi, where the plishtim had the aron for a while, and the aron caused the plishtim all sorts of discomfort and problems while they had the aron. So they wanted to give back the aron. The only thing is they weren't sure the best way to do it, because in the back of their minds, as people tend to do sometimes, when even when things are obviously divine punishment, in the back of their minds they started thinking, who knows, maybe it's a coincidence. So they're not going to just give it back, because maybe it was just a coincidence that they were suffering while they were holding onto the aron. So what do? They took the aron, they attached it to, they put it on a wagon, and and they had it pulled by young cows, and they had the mothers on the other side, so that it would be totally unnatural for the young to go away from the mothers, and they set it on the road, and they said, let's see where it goes. And it went straight, right back to the Jewish camp, without any, without turning one way or the other. It was obviously something that was a great miracle, and was obviously something that was divinely inspired. So says the Gemara, Vayisharna haparos. Rashi, by the way, on that pasuk, Vayisharna, right? Rashi points out that that word is an androgynous. What does it mean the word is an androgynous? Because it starts out with a yud in the vayi, as if it's a masculine, vayisharna, and then it ends as a feminine. So obviously it's trying to tell me something about some combination of masculinity and femininity. But anyway, vayisharna aparos b'derech al derech b'shemesh v'gomer. So my vayisharna. So the Gemara says, what does this word mean? Where do you find that, what does vayisharna mean? It means that the cows themselves were singing Shira. So Rav Zutra bar Tuvya Amar Rav Sheyashru Pneim Keneged Aron Va'amru Shira. It means that they turned their faces to face directly at the Aron, and they said Shira while they were facing the Aron. Okay, so now we know the cows were singing Shira. Ask the Gemara the next obvious question. Umay Shira Amru? What Shira were they singing? If cows could sing, what would cows sing? Right? So what Shira were they singing? So says Gemara, Amar Rav Yochum Mishum Rameir, Oz Yashir Moshe of Bnei Yisrael. What better Shira is there to sing than Az Yashir? So they sang Az Yashir Moshe of Bnei Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan Didei Amar. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan said in the name of Rav Meir. Rabbi Yochanan himself, though, said Martin Bayomahu Hodu Hashem Karu V'Shmo, that they sang the Shira of that pasuk from Yeshayov. Martin Bayomahu Hodu Hashem Kiru V'Shmo Hodu Yivam Malosav Iskiru Kiniskav Shmo, etc. Rabbi Shum Ben Lakish Amar Mizmora Yasma. No, the Shira that they sang was the Orphaned Mizmar. What's the orphaned Mizmar? Mizmar Shirul Hashem Shir Chadash Kinfalos Aso Shiloh Mino Zro Kadcho. That's the Mizmar Yasma. Why is that an orphaned Mizmar? What makes it orphaned? So if you look at Rashi, he says Yasma on the first very wide line on the bottom of the page. Yasma Shiloh Huskar Shem Amru. Very often the Mizmar will say Mizmar Le David. Right? It will say who authored the Mizmar. And over here it's just a Mizmar. It doesn't say who authored it, and therefore it's a Mizmar Yasma. Yasma is not, does not mean orphaned, it means anonymous, that no one took credit for it, and since it's anonymous, that's why it's called Mizmora Yasma. If you look at Tosos, though, Mizmora Yasma says Tosos, Pirusha Kunshushlo, who's Karshem Ha'omer? It never says who said the Mizmor. V'kasha, do kama Mizmor miyishkeotziba. He says you have tons of Mizmorim like that in Tehillim, where it doesn't give credit to whoever it was that authored it. Mizmor Lasoda, Mizmor Shili Yom HaShabbos, Shlo, who's Karshem Ha'omer? And that obviously gave Midrashim the opportunity to expound on who possibly may have authored it. Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos, the Medrash tells us, Adam Arishon authored Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos, right? It's in Yonah Diyoma, Kocha Shal Tshuva. The Medrash says that Adam Arishon saw Kayin, and he said, hey, what happened with your Din Torah in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I'm surprised you're still around. What's going on? And Kayin said, well, I did Asisi Tshuva v'nis Pasharti. I did Tshuva and I made a Pshar with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Adam Arishon says, Kachi Kocha Shal Tshuva v'nochi lo yadati. Could it be that's the Koch of Tshuva, and I had no idea that Tshuva is so powerful? Miyad Pasach v'amar Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos. So right there on the spot, he composed Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos. What gives us the license to say that Adam Rishon composed it? Because the Pasuk in Tehillim doesn't say who composed it, so it's possible to say that Adam Rishon composed it. But there are tons of Mizmorim like that it's not attributed in the words itself. So you can't call this one Bedavka Mizmor Yasma because it's not attributed. So it says Tosos Menir Lefarish Shekar Lo Yasma Mishum Shlo Huskar Alma Nemar Kimo Mizmor Lesoda Shemifarish Shenasal Omer Alatoda V'chem Mizmor Shil Yom HaShabbos. It's not that it wasn't that the author remains anonymous. It's that the subject remains anonymous. In honor of what was this Mizmor composed? Mizmor L'Soda is very obviously about Hoda'ah, about Thanksgiving. Mizmor Shil Yom HaShabbos can't be more obvious than that. It's about Yom HaShabbos. This one doesn't say anything. Mizmor. And there are, he says, there are plenty of chapters in Tehillim that don't say in honor of what they were composed, but none of them are Mizmorim. The only one that's a Mizmor that doesn't say in honor of what it was composed is this Mizmor. And that's why we call it Mizmor Yasma. It is an orphaned Mizmor. Says the Gemara further, Rab Lazar Amar, Hashem Melech Yurgzu Amim, Rab Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Amar, Hashem Melech Yurgzu Slavesh. Again, different opinions of what Shira, these cows, may have sung. Rab Yisrael Nafcha Amar, Roni Roni Hashitas Nofi Barov Adarach HaMuchushekes Berik Meizav HaMulala B'dvir Armon Mufuar Abadei Adoyim. Rab Ashi Masinol Lahad Rab Yitzchak Aha. Rab Ashi took Rab Yitzchak's Pasuk and he applied it to the following. Vayihi Bin Soa Aron Vayom Remosha Kuma Hashem. When the Aron traveled, Moshe declared, Kuma Hashem, Yisrael Mayamru. What did the Jewish people say when the Aron was traveling? We know what Moshe was saying. Am Rabbi Yitzchak, Roni, Roni, Hashita, V'chule. So that's where Rabbi Yitzchak applies this Pasuk of Roni, Roni. So two opinions of where to apply that Pasuk of Roni, Roni, either to the cows, what they were singing as they were bringing back the Aron, or when the Aron was traveling in the Midbar with the Jewish people. Either way, it definitely applied to the Aron. It was definitely about the movement of the Aron, the traveling of the Aron. Says the Gemara Vayter, once we're discussing, I'm not really sure actually what it relates to, but the Gemara starts going off on a different discussion. Let's try to figure it out maybe. Amirav, Kiman Karu Parsa'i L'Safra Devir. Why do the Parsa'i people call a Sefer Devir? Where does the word Devir come from in the Parsa'i language? So Mehacha, Vishem Devir Lefnim, Kiryat Sefer. The name of the city Devir used to be called Kiryat Sefer. So you see that Kiryat Sefer, Devir, is a translation of Kiryat Sefer. You see that Devir must have been a translation of the word Sefer. So that's why the Parsai people call Devir Sefer. If you look at Rashi, Devir, who's Sefer Belashon Parsi, that in the Parsi language, it's Sefer. So it's, why do we care about this? Why do we care about, we really study other languages so much, that we care so much, and in Chinese, do you know what this is called? And I mean, the other languages are, we don't assume have Kedusha, it's the Lashon HaKodesh has Kedusha. Other languages are just a way to label something. You need to know that, to differentiate between this and that, you need to know this is a table, that's a chair. But this could have been a table, and this could have been a chair just the same. It's just a label. It's just a name for something. So why all of a sudden are we so interested? We need to know exactly where the names in Parsi, in the words in Parsi came from. So in the Shla Kadosh, it's quoted by Shar Mitzion Baalach over here. The Shla Kadosh on Maseches Psachim Drush Gimel writes that which we find that the Torah sometimes uses Lashonos that we also find in Lashonos Ha'amim, that we also find in other languages. It's because these words originated rather in Lashon HaKodesh. And through the Dor HaFlaga, they got mixed in. There are little pieces of Lashon HaKodesh that got scattered into many other languages. So, and there's no Ummah from all the Ayin Ummos, from all the 70 nations, that don't have in their language something mixed in from Lashon HaKodesh. So when Chazal detected that there was something there, that there's something in another language that originates in Lashon HaKodesh, that's what they were looking for. That's what, right, that's the Gemara says, Totafos, Tat Bekaspi Shtayim. The word Tat in Kaspi language is Shtayim. Who cares what it is? Why? And the Torah writes in that language? The Torah writes in some other language? Torah writes in Lashon HaKodesh. Elamai, no, the way it started as Lashon HaKodesh. The only thing is we weren't sure how to teach the word, but we see that Nakuda of Lashon HaKodesh in some other language, and based on what it means in that language, we're able to figure out what it meant originally in the Lashon HaKodesh. So that's what we're worried about with these names. Rav, what's the gears over here? He changes it to Amaravashi. Amaravashi, Keman Karu Parsoi Lenida Dashtana. Why do the Parsoi people refer to Anida as a Dashtana? Where does the word Dashtana, how does the word Dashtana relate to Anida? So Mehacha, it's from the following. Ki Derech Nashim Li. That the Pasuk says that that when who was it, when Rachel didn't want to get off the animal, when Lavan was going around looking for his avodah zarah, said, I'm sorry, it wouldn't be appropriate for me to get up right now. Ki derech nashim li. So what do you mean derech nashim li? It meant she was a nida. So you see that nida can be a similar sound to the word dashtana. Says the pasuk weiter, another pasuk in Yoshua, Vayidom Hashemesh v'yareach amad ad yikom goy oivav halo yiksuva al sefer yashar. Very interesting. The sun stops for Yoshua, time stands still for him in order to finish fighting his war, and the pasuk refers to, yeah, this is how time stands still, you know, like it happens in Sefer HaYashar. So my Sefer HaYashar, what is Sefer HaYashar that we're referring to where time stood still? Sefer Yashar is the Sefer of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov that are called Yisharim. The Medrash refers to Sefer Bereishis, and the Gemara right here is referring to Sefer Bereishis as Sefer HaYashar, because those people who were most Yashar were the heroes of Sefer Bereishis. Shenemar Tamus Nafshi Mos Yisharim, as the Pasuk says that Bilam prayed that he should die a Mos Yisharim, he should die a death of the Yisharim. He was jealous of Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, not for their Nevuah, he had plenty of that, not for their tzidkus, he had no interest in that, but for their yashrus, for the sense of yashar. That was Bilam's concern. So, just as a side point, it's important to mention, whenever you see this concept of Sefer Bereishis being called Sefer HaYashar, perhaps the most well-known maramakom on this topic is the Hakdama to the Netziv, to Sefer Bereishis. The Netziv has a very beautiful Hakdama to each of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and he tries to expound in each of the Hakdamos on unique names that are given to that Sefer throughout Chazal. That Chazal sometimes will not call it Bereishis Shmos Vayikra B'Midbar Dvarim, they'll call it something else. So the name he focuses on for Bereishis is Sefer HaYashar. And he explains that a sense of Yashrus is a sense of a person caring about other people, being non-judgmental toward other people in terms of loving them and caring about them, even if everything that they do stands against what your sense of right and wrong is. And that was and that's the Sefer of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. They have an Avraham Avinu who could see people of Sodom who everything they do he despises. He can't stand what they do, and yet he prays for them. He prays for them to be able to survive. It's about hating the sin, not the sinner. That's the ultimate sense of Yashrus. And that's what Bilam was jealous of. Bilam, who couldn't look with an ayin tova, looked at everything with an ayin ra'a, was jealous of how they were able to look at people who were diametrically opposed to them philosophically and theologically, and they were able to not hate the people and somehow just hate the sin without hating the sinner. And that was incredible to Bilam. That's the Netziv's Vart. He says a lot more there, but that's the Netziv in his paragraph introducing Sefer Bereishis. V'hecha remiza, where do we find a remez to this in Bereishis that Yahushua is one day going to cause the sun to stand still? Because after all, the Paskin Yahushua says, yeah, the sun stood still for Yoshua, like it says in Sefer Yashar. So where in the world does it say that in Sefer Bereishis? The Zaruiyah Mloa Gayim. The Pasuk says, in regards to Ephraim, right, the Lamata Ephraim, from who Yahushua descended, right, it says, V'zaruiyah Mloa Gayim, that all of the Gayim are going to be full of Yira, of fear, of a descendant, of a child of the Shevet of Ephraim. And who's that? That's Yoshua. How is everyone going to be afraid? Is it possible even when I'm fighting a war, so the people I'm fighting against might be afraid. But people back then, before the age of mass communication, people on the other side of the world had no idea the war was going on. How could they be afraid of me? It must be something happened while a Zera of Ephraim, while a descendant of Ephraim was fighting, that changed the whole way the world ran. And that caused everyone to take notice. Like what? Like the sun standing still. That will do the trick. Right? That causes everyone to take notice, and that's how it became well known throughout the entire world. Says the Gemara, when is it that the whole world takes notice? When the sun stands still for Yoshua. Pasuk goes on to say, that the sun stood halfway through the sky, right in the center of the sky, and it did not continue to go like a complete day. Vikama, what does that mean? How long did this whole process of the sun standing still take place? Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Esrim Varba'a Sha'i. It was 24 hours. Azil Shis Vikamshis. Azil Shis Vikamshis. It wasn't that it stood in one place for 24 hours. It traveled for 6 hours, then stood for 6 hours. Moved for another 6 hours, stood for another 6 hours. That's how that 24, so 12 hours passed in 24 hours. 24 hours of time, 12 hours of sunlight time actually passed because it stopped for 6 hours. So the world was only really delayed by 12 hours. The world was not delayed by more than that. Kula milsa ki yom tamim, and all together, in the travels and the stopping, all together was a yom tamim, was like a complete day, was 24 hours. Rabbi Lazar Amar, Rabbi Lazar says, no, it was shloshim v'shis, it was really 36 hours. How do you get to 36? Azul shis become tresar. The sun moved for 6 hours, then stood still for 12 hours. Azul shis become tresar. Again, moved for another 6 hours, stood still for 12 hours. Amidaso kiyam tamim. So it stood still. In total, the standing still time was 24 hours. So it set us back a full 24 hours. Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni amar arbayim u'shmona, that it was really a 48-hour process. Azul shis become tresar. It traveled for 6 hours, stopped for 12. Azul shis become esrim varba'a. Went for another 6 hours and then stopped for 24. 24 plus 12 is 36, plus the 12 that it was moving, that's 48. So the whole process took 48 hours. Shnemar v'lo'atz lavo ki yom tamim, that it wouldn't go for a yom tamim. M'chal d'mei kara lav ki yom tamim ava. Sounds like originally, when it first stopped, it wasn't a yom tamim. It was only on the second stop that it stopped for a full cycle, that it stopped for a full 24 hours. Ikadami b'tosefta pligi. Others have a different version that they argued in the following way. Rabbi Shur ben Levi Amar, esim rabba azal, that esim rabba, that it was 24 hours, azal shis become tresar, that it went for 6, stopped for 12, azal shis become tresar, another 6, stopped for another 12, amidasu kiyam tamim, and therefore the full stopping was for 24 hours. Rabbi Lazar Omer, shloshim v'sheish, it was 36 hours, azal shis become tresar, went for 6, stopped for 12, azal shis become esim rabba, went for another 6 and stopped for 24, v'lo atzlavo kiyam tamim, and that's why it says that it was a complete day, that it didn't go. On the second time that it stopped, it stayed in place for a complete day. Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni Amar Arba'im Ushmona, that it was really 48 hours in total. Azul Shis v'kam Esrim V'Arba'a, Azul Shis v'kam Chavdalid, that it was 48 hours of the sun standing still. It moved for 6 hours, then stood still for 24. Moved another 6 hours, stood still for another 24. Makish Amidasa L'Biyaso, Ma Biyaso Kiyam Tamim, Af Amidasa Kiyam Tamim. Just like its coming in was a complete day, so too its standing still was a complete day. Tana, Kishem Sham Dulacham Yeshua, Kacham Amdulacham Lemoshel Naktiman Ben Gurion. So the Gemara just says, by the way, you shouldn't think that this is an unprecedented event in the history of humanity, that the sun stood still. It wasn't only Yeshua that had the sun stand still for him. It happened for Moshe Rabbeinu and for Naktiman Ben Gurion as well. So says the Gemara, Yeshua cry. Okay, we know where it happened to Yeshua because the Psukim say it to us explicitly. Naktiman Ben Gurion, Gemara. Naktiman Ben Gurion, we know that story from the Gemara. Our Gemara, interestingly, does not rehash that story. Rashi refers you to the Gemara in Tainus that tells the story of Nachman ben Gurion, who owed money on a certain day to a certain Gentile, and the person said, if the money is not returned by that day, then he's going to have to give up, I forgot exactly what the deal was, he's going to have to give up something major, and the day was about to end, and right, it was rain, it had to do with rain, right? And Nachman ben Gurion, right, that was the story, where he needed it to rain by a certain time. I don't remember exactly, but somehow he went and he davened, and the clouds came, and when the clouds dispersed, the sun was still out there, even though really the time should have been up by the Esser Mayanos, right? He borrowed springs and he needed to return full springs of of water, full of water, and there had been a drought. That's why it's in Tainus, because in Tainus it's all about these stories of droughts. So he had to return it full. So the guy said, look, your time is up. And he said, no, it's not up yet. And he davened, the sun stood still until everything had time to the rain to fill everything in, and therefore he did not lose out in the end. So that was Nakdim Ben Gurion. L'Moshe Minalan, where do we ever find that the sun stood still for Moshe? So says the Gemara, Asya Achel Achel, Ksiv Hacha. Pasuk says over here, it's a Gzeir Shavu, we learn, Achel, it says in two different places. It says over here, Achel tas pachdecha, in the beginning of Parshas Devarim, Ksiv Hasim Yoshua, Achel godlecha. So we learn if he stood still for Yoshua, it stood still for Moshe also, about whom it was speaking in Parshas Devarim. Now, it's interesting because when exactly did the sun stand still for Moshe Rabbeinu? So Rashi over here says it stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu in the Melchemes Sichon, in the war against Sichon. In the Tanit Be'eliyahu Rabbah, it says that it was Melchemes Amalek that the sun stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu. In the Medrash in Tehillim, it says that it stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu twice. Once in the war on Sichon, and once in the war on Amalek. Rabbeinu Bechai in Parshas Yisro says, in the name of Medrash, that the sun stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu five times. And he gives a list of the five times when it stood still. Yitzias Mitzrayim, the day that they crossed the Yamsuf, the day that they fought Amalek, the day of Matan Torah, and Yom Shel Nachle Arnon. Interestingly, it doesn't mention the one that Rashi says over here. So there was apparently some confusion about when and how many times the sun actually stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says, how do I know it stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu? Asya tes. We have, it says tes in two different places. Ksiv hacha achel tes pachtecha. In connection to Moshe Rabbeinu, it says tes pachtecha. Ksiv Yoshua biyom tes Hashem es Amori. So again, that links Moshe to Yoshua. So when the sun stood still for Yoshua, we learn from there, it also stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu. Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni Amar, mikufe dekras shamet lei. We learn it from the pasuk itself. You don't need to make a gzeirah shava to different pesukim. That same pasuk we keep quoting of Hayom Hazeh Achel Teis Pachtecha. What does the pasuk go on to say? It says Teis Pachtecha v'yiraska al pnei ha'amim. Your fear and should be imposed on the other nations. Tachas kol hashemayim asher yishmu nishim acha v'ragzu v'chalu mipanecha. That they will hear your news and they will tremble from in front of you. What is going to cause all the other nations to fear and tremble? When the sun stands still for Moshe Rabbeinu, that's a pretty good simon that he's doing something right in his life and that he's got God on his side. Says the Gemara, it's nice to say that all these other great people like Nakdimon and Moshe Rabbeinu had the sun stand still for them also. Problem is, it's against the Pasuk. The Pasuk in Navi says, when it says that it happened for Yoshua, the Pasuk explicitly says that it never happened. Never happened before nor after that the sun ever stood still for somebody. So either never stood still for quite as long, and that's what it means, that it wasn't like that ever before or after, but it did happen on some level. Avnei barad lo havu, that it didn't have accompanying hailstones that went with it, that went with the sun standing still. Pasuk says that Hashem caused to rain down on them these massive stones. So that's the part that never happened before or after, that in conjunction with the sun standing still, it felt like Armageddon. It felt like the whole world was ending, that there were stones coming down from heaven. It was wild. Pasuk, once we're talking about Sefer HaYashar, and what it says in Sefer HaYashar, we quote another Pasuk about Sefer HaYashar. Pasuk says and Sefer Shmuel, Vayomer Lamed Bnei Yehuda Keshes, Hinei Ksuv al Sefer HaYashar. We say something about fighting with a bow and arrow, that appears in Sefer HaYashar. So says the Gemara, my Sefer HaYashar, where in Sefer HaYashar does that appear? Which Sefer HaYashar are we talking about? Amar Rabchir Barabba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zeh Sefer Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, Shinikru Yisharim. What do you mean, which Sefer HaYashar? The Sefer of Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, the Sefer Bereishis. They're the ones that are called Yisharim. Dechsiv Bu, Thomas Nafshi, Mos Yisharim, Vatiach Risi Kamahu. That's who Bilam prayed about, that he wants to die the death of the Yisharim. He wants his end to be like their end. The Hecha Remiza, where do we find in Sefer HaYashar that Yehuda is going to possess this power of fighting with a keshes, of fighting with a bow and arrow? So the pasuk says, Yehuda ati yoducha achicha yodcha ba'oref oivecha. Your hand is going to be by the neck of your enemy. What type of warfare involves pulling your hand near your neck, near the back of your neck? Haviomer zukeshes. The back of your neck, when the only type of warfare that you bring your hand to the back of your neck is when you're pulling a bow and arrow. You pull it back, and your back hand is about the back of your neck. So then that must be the reference in the Chumash, in the Sefer HaYashar, to the expertise in that area of warfare. Rav Lazar says, no, that's not the Sefer HaYashar we're referring to over here. It's that Sefer Mishneh Torah. The Sefer HaYashar we're talking about is Sefer Devarim, not Sefer Breishis. If I might correlate Sefer HaYashar, how did Sefer Devarim get the name Sefer HaYashar? Tichsiv Asisa HaYashar V'Tov. It says in Sefer Devarim, "Vasisa Hayashar Vatov Beinei Hashem." So you see that the word Yashar appears in Sefer Devarim. Must be Sefer Devarim and Sefer Yashar. Good. Veheichu Remiza. But where does it say anything about expertise in fighting with bow and arrow in Sefer Devarim? Yodav Ravlo. The pasuk says, "Veizui Melchamah Shetzricha Shtei Yadayim." What type of warfare involves two hands? Normally, when you're fighting with a sword, you hold the sword with one hand. So where do you need two hands? What kind of weapon requires two hands to operate? Haviyomer Zukesha. It's the only kind of weapon that needs two hands to operate is the bow and arrow. So that's where you see the reference in Sefer Devarim. But it's very strange. The Gemara wants to say that Sefer Devarim is called Sefer Yashar because there is one pasuk that has the word Yashar once in Sefer Devarim. In Sefer Shmos, it says, V'hayashar be'inov ta'ase. It also has the term Yashar. So why is it that we don't even look at Sefer Shmos? We go from Sefer Bereishis to Sefer Devarim. And meaning, Bereishis Mele, it's about the quality of the people. It's descriptive of the entire Sefer. But when it comes to Sefer Devarim, it's not really descriptive. It doesn't seem to be descriptive of the entire Sefer. You picked a random pasuk that happens to have the word Yashar in it. So in Shor Mitzvah Balach, he quotes three answers to this question. First of all, he says, he quotes from the Marsha. So the Marsha, apparently, right here in our Gemara, says that every time it quotes the pasuk of Asisa Yashar V'Tov, Asisa Yashar V'Tov always refers to Lefnim Yishur Sadin. It always refers to going beyond the letter of the law. And we find in Sefer Devarim there are a lot of mitzvahs like that. There's a lot of discussion of things that are Lefnim Yishur Sadin type of dinim in Sefer Devarim. So therefore, it's not just a random pasuk. It's a pasuk that is descriptive of many of the halachas that we have in dealings in business and things like that that you find in Sefer Devarim that relate to Vasisa Yashar V'Tov. So it is descriptive. Ben Yoyada says that in Sefer Shmos, you only have this one pasuk that says the word Yashar, but in Sefer Devarim there are actually four psukim with the word Yashar in them, or with the word V'Hayashar. And another answer Ben Yoyada gives is that in Sefer Shmos it's not a tzivui. In Sefer Shmos, what does it say? It says that V'Hayashar Be'enav Ta'ase. It's not giving a mitzvah that that's what you have to do. It's saying that if you do Hayashar Be'enav, then you're going to be Zochet to call a machlash or something Mitzrayim Lo'as Melecha. Then you're not going to have to suffer the same fate that the Egyptians had to suffer. But in Sefer Devarim, it's a mitzvah, it's an asara. So therefore, it's more likely that we're going to call the whole Sefer based on a mitzvah rather than just a matter-of-fact kind of statement. Okay, Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar, Zeh Sefer Shoftim. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani says, no, the Sefer HaYashar that we're referring to is Sefer Shoftim. V'amai Karolei Sefer HaYashar, why is Sefer Shoftim of all places called Sefer HaYashar? D'chsiv, because it says in Sefer Shoftim, D'chsiv Be'yam Mehem Ein Melech B'Yisrael Ish HaYashar Be'en Av Yaseh. If you ever read through the end of Sefer Shoftim, one story after another, just the most wild stories you could ever imagine, just crazy things were going on in Klal Yisrael. And it's not written chronologically. It's written that way to make a point and to tell you that this system wasn't working. It's a way of introducing Sefer Shmuel, which is going to introduce us to the concept of a melech. And that's why the psukim continuously repeat. This is just one example. Toward the end of Sefer Shoftim, that Bayam Mehem ain melech be Yisrael. A dozen times at the end of Sefer Shoftim. By the way, there was no king, and Pesel Micha happened. There was no king, and Pilegish Begiva happened. And you know what happened to Pilegish Begiva? Because there was no king, it just always repeats. No king, no king, no king. That's a way of introducing that people didn't have leadership, they didn't have guidance, and because of that, they went in these wild directions. But Vehecha Remiza, where do we find there any sort of expertise in bow and arrow? L'man das doros b'nei Yisrael l'lamda milchama. Ve'ezu hi milchama shetzricha limud. Pasuk refers to l'lamda milchama, to teach them the ways of the war. What type of warfare requires limud, requires expertise and a know-how? Haviyomer zukeshes. That's archery, requires know-how. But how do we know that pasuk is about Yehuda? Because the pasuk says in Sefer Shoftim, Vayomer Hashem, Yehuda yale. They said, who should go first to fight the Kananim? And Hashem said, let Yehuda go first. Yehuda will be the ideal candidate to go first. Fine, period. Next pasuk we're going to darshin. Pasuk says, "Vayorem hatabach es hashok veheoleha," that the butcher picked up the shok, the thigh, and that which was on it. So vayasav lefnei Shaul, and he placed it in front of Shaul. My veheoleha. What does that mean? It's a very unusual term. And that which was on it. So the Gemara is going to give several possibilities, three possibilities of what it might mean. Possibility number one, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, shok va'alya. It means the shok and the tail. Mai v'ha'aleha. Why does it refer to the tail as the thing that is on it? Demismecha shok la'alya. Because it happens to be that the tail is right near the shok. Rabbi Elazar Amar, shok v'chaze. Rabbi Elazar says, no, it's the shok, the thigh, and the breast. Mai v'ha'aleha. What does it mean? Because whenever we wave a chaz of a shok, we put the chaz and the shok together. We put the breast together with the thigh of the animal and we wave them together. So that's why it's called viha aleha. It doesn't mean it's on it biologically on the animal. It means that that's what we often put together with the shok. From Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Amar, Shmuel Bar Nachmeni says a third shita, shok v'shofi. It's the thigh and the tip of the thigh bone. My viha aleha. That's very literally the tip of the thigh bone is obviously directly right above the thigh bone. So that's why it's called Viha Aleha. Fine. Lotus Yachid Isha Imahim. Now we're going back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said that a woman should never have yichud with Ovdei Kochavim. That it's a problem for a woman to ever be alone with Ovdei Kochavim. So says Gemara B'maya Skinan. What exactly is the case where we say she better not have yichud with Ovdei Kochavim? Ilei Mebchad, if you want to say that one woman should not have yichud with an Ovdei Kochavim, the Kavasag Abi Yisrael Mishari. You're not allowed to have that situation even with a Jew. Forget about Ovdei Kochavim. Even when it's with a Jew, you're not allowed to do that. Vatanan, we have a Mishnah that says at the end of Maseches Kiddushin, Lo Yisyachid Ish Echad Im Shtei Nashim, that a man should not have yichud even with two women. So you see beferish that even with the Jews it's not permissible. So what's the emphasis over here? Dafka and Ovdei Kochavim. Ella b'tlasa. So it must be that we're talking about with three. And it's talking about three people together. That the kavasag gabi yisrael b'prutz, meaning three men and one woman. So she shouldn't have yichud even with three. The kavasag gabi yisrael b'prutzim. That the same is true with Jewish people if the kinds of people you're dealing with are not the most the finest people when you're dealing with prutzim. B'prutzim mishari, is it really permissible by a Jew even? V'atanan, aval isha achas misyachedes im shnei anashim, we say a woman is allowed to be alone with two men. That's mutter in the Mishnah. But v'amar vidom shmuel lo shanu el b'ksherim. That's only true if they're kosher. Aval b'prutzim afilu asar namilo. But if you have prutzim, then even 10 people together is not going to be good enough. Because what happens? Typically, the whole svara of more people helping is a sense of embarrassment, is a sense of busha. That if two men are together, one is not going to do anything because he's embarrassed in front of his friend. But if they're partners in crime, and they get to... So partners, they're not embarrassed, they help each other out. That's what they do, right? That's the theory of a ganav. Normally, a ganav works alone and he works at night. But if he's with other ganavim, so you can get 10 guys together and pull off a heist of whatever, and they'll work together, and they'll be able to do more because they are together. So it's not going to help. And Maisa Hayavo Tziua Asara B'mita. It happened once that they had 10 guys bringing out a woman on a mita outside of the city, meaning they were pretending that they were burying her and that she was dead. And then as soon as they got outside of the city, she was obviously still alive, and they violated her or whatever else, and they weren't embarrassed at all in front of each other. So you see, when it comes to prutzim, we never allow a woman to be alone, even with several men. So says the Gemara, what's the chiddush of a woman not being alone with an Ovid Kochavim? It means even if the Ovid Kochavim's wife is with him, a Jewish woman should not be alone in a room with him. Why? Ovid Kochavim ein ishto mishamarto, aval Yisrael ishto mishamarto. Major difference between the way an Ovid Kochavim marriage works and a Jewish marriage works. An Ovid Kochavim marriage, his wife is not going to care what he does. They have they're very open and they let each other experiment and explore with other people, and they don't have a problem. That's what Rashi says, because she knows she has her own extracurricular activities, so she's not going to press him not to have extramarital affairs. But when it comes to a Jewish wife is always going to watch over her husband when she's in the room to make sure. Now it's interesting. We have a halacha by yichud called bala bi'ir that there's a heter. You're allowed to have yichud with a woman if her husband is in the city. Now, her husband doesn't have to be in the room, just in the city. How you define city is a very interesting discussion. Rav Moshe has a tshuva. What if the husband's working in Manhattan, she lives in the suburbs, and she's in the suburbs, so the electrician comes over, the plumber comes over to fix something. Is that called bala bi'ir? Is that a problem of yichud? But you certainly don't need the husband to be in the same room. By a wife, we say ishto mishamarto, that the wife is watching him. The idea is that when it comes to bala bi'ir, it's not an issue that he's necessarily going to catch them. It's an issue that when her husband is around, she feels a certain sense of fear, which a husband doesn't feel for the wife. Now, he doesn't want his wife to catch him, he doesn't want his wife to see him, so if she's right there, he's not going to do anything. But the fact that she's in the city isn't going to make a difference. There's a discussion we've shown him even, what if it's bala bi'ir, but the husband has no idea where she is? She went to some other place and he has no idea how to find her, he has no idea where she is. Does bala bi'ir still help? Is bala bi'ir just a vart that he might walk in at any moment? Or no, maybe it's something psychological, that the woman is going to be so much more on guard when she just knows emotionally that her husband is in the same city. But anyway, that's one discussion. There are a lot of interesting things the Gemara refers to very briefly over here. It's a major Kiddushin sugya at the very end of Maseches Kiddushin, the sugya of Yichud. But one of the things the Gemara refers to over here is Prutzim. What about Prutzim? That if there are Prutzim, then you're not allowed to have Yichud. What's the definition of Prutzim? So in Maseches Kiddushin, Rav has a comment in the Gemara where he says, Lav ksherin kagon anan, ela kagon Rabbi Chanina bar Papi v'chaverav. Rav says, a kasher is not someone like me. A kasher is like the real gedolim, Rabbi Chanina bar Papi, and people like him. So the Rishonim have a dispute over there. Rav is a parutz. We don't consider Rav a kasher in regards to Ilchus Yichud, that if you have two men like Rav alone in a room with a woman, that's called Yichud? Is that really the halacha? So some of the Rishonim say, yes, Rav said that he's a parutz, and therefore, Kal v'chomer, in our generations, everyone is a parutz, and that's why Kesem Mishnah says, the Magen Mishnah says rather, that the Rambam doesn't quote this idea that you're allowed to be miyache together with ksherim, that if there are two men that are ksherim, Rambam doesn't even mention it. Why does Rambam not mention it? Because there's no such thing anymore. There's no such thing as a kasher anymore. Everyone is a parutz. The Ran over there says, no, come on, that's ridiculous. Rav can't be considered a parutz. Of course Rav is a kasher. He was being humble. You never have Tzadikei Olam saying, I'm such a tzaddik. So he was being humble. He was saying that I don't trust myself. I don't, I consider myself like a parutz. So that's the discussion in the poskim. And it reflects itself in Shulchan Aruch, in the Ramah, in Evin Ezer, Paschal's like the Ran, in Simon Chav Beis and Evin Ezer. But it's not so clear from Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin more in line with the Rambam. So anyway, so that's the discussion about parutz. Says the Gemara Vayter, V'teipukle mishum shvichas damim. Why are we saying a woman is not allowed to be alone in a room with an Ovid Kochavim? Because we're afraid that there's going to be sexual immorality going on. What about murder? What about the fact that he'll murder her? Says the Gemara, Am Rabbi Yirmiyahu be isha chashuva eskinan demir tsimina. We're dealing with an isha chashuva where he's going to be afraid he's not going to murder her. Rabbi Idi Amar, Isha Klei Zayna Aleha, that a woman is always considered armed. What does it mean a woman is always considered armed? It means that people don't like to kill women. That he's going to have a certain sense of Rachmanis on her. He's not going to want to kill her. She's considered armed in that sense that her tears are going to get her somewhere. So my binai, what's the nafkamina between the two? Ika binai isha chashuva bein anashim v'she'ina chashuva bein hanashim. Nafkamina would be if you have a woman who's considered chashuv amongst men but is not considered chashuv amongst women. What in the world does that mean and how is that a nafkamina? So if you look at Rashi says, Ike benayu in the second to last skinny line, Isha chashuva bein anashim krova l'malchus. What does it mean she's chashuv amongst men? It means she's politically connected. Ve'ina chashuva bein hanashim, she's not chashuv amongst women. What do women care about? Who looks good? Who's beautiful? So the ena chashuva bein hanashim means ena yafesh. She's not a very good looking woman. So the Rabbi Yirmiyahu demuki labi isha chashuva demashma chashuva bein anashim ubein anashim the krova l'malchus evilo katila. According to Rabbi Yirmiyahu, that it's all about if she's krov l'malchus, if she's politically connected, then he's not going to kill her. But you still have to worry about Arayos because she's very beautiful, but he's not going to kill her. But hacha chashuva bein ha'anashim v'lo bein anashim shar yili yichude, he would be allowed to have yichud with her because you don't have to worry on either account. If she's not beautiful and she's politically connected, so the political connections will get her out of being murdered. Not being beautiful will save her from all sorts of Arayos problems because the guy's not going to be attracted to her at all, so it's not going to cause any sort of problem like that. But according to Rav Yid, who said that Yichud it would still be asur to be miyached, because the whole chashash is about erva, and Rav Yehudi never really seemed to distinguish between a beautiful woman and a non-beautiful woman. The whole concern is about erva, and that concern exists. Tosfos over here is very bothered by this whole line of reasoning of Rashi. He says, where do you ever have such a halacha? That if a woman is not beautiful, then all of a sudden, you don't have to worry about anything. You know, you never, like, I always have talmidim ask me when they ask yichud shaylas. Yichud with my housekeeper. I'm telling you, Rabbi, there's not a chance in the world, if she were the last woman on earth, that anything would ever happen with this housekeeper. She's an 80-year-old, whatever. It's never, ever going to happen. But we don't distinguish in the halacha. There might be, if it's a zakin, that mamish is unable to do anything. Rav Moshe has tshuvas about that. If someone who's a zakin who physically is incapable, okay, so then maybe there's room to be makel. But otherwise, just based on unattractiveness alone, Tosfos is very bothered by this. The only place where we actually do have it, Beferish in the Gemara, is where the Gemara says that you're not allowed to be mistakel at a woman, you're not allowed to be mistakel at a pnuya, at an ashes ish, afilu mukhuaris, that at a married woman, you're not allowed to be mistakel even if she's ugly, and a pnuya sounds like only if she's beautiful. That if a pnuya is ugly, you're allowed to look at her, because the yetzer hara for a married woman is greater than the yetzer hara for a single woman. Tanya kavasi dravidi baravin, we have a brice that supports Rav Yehudi baravin, ha'isha afapi shasholim imal, lo tisyachin imal mnesha chashudin ala rayos. A woman who, even though is secure in terms of she's not going to get killed, you still can't have yichud. She still can't have yichud with the Ovid Kachav because of arayos. Lo yisachin adam imahem. A regular Jew should not have yichud together with Ovid Kachavim. Tan Rabban Yisrael shen zaymin Ovid Kachavim b'derech tofel liyimino. If a Jew is walking together with a non-Jew, he should make sure the non-Jew ends up on his right side. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochum ben Broka Omer besayif tofel liyimino. If the non-Jew is holding a sword, you want the non-Jew on your right side because his sword is going to be on his left side, which will be easy for you to grab if you see his arm going up to go get it. B'makal tofel l'smola. But if he's holding a makal, a shorter knife, which would go on his right side, you want him on your left side, so you have access to his knife. If they happen to be going up an incline or down, so the Jew should not be lamata with the Ovid Kachavim lamala, because you don't want to give him an easy shot at you. You want it the other way around, where you're above and he's below. And don't bow down in front of him, because then he'll just crush your skull. If they ask you where you're going, tell them you're going to somewhere much further than you're actually going. They say, hey, what exit are you getting off this highway? Tell them exit 50, even though it's really only exit 30. Like Yaakov did Yaakov Nasa Sukosa. He said that he was going to Seir. In fact, he was really only going to Sukos. We'll just finish with the Maisa. Maisa, the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva, the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva were traveling to Chziv, Paguba and Listim, bandits attacked them. And the bandits said, where are you guys going? They said, oh, we're going to Acho. So the bandits figured, okay, we got plenty of time. We'll attack him later. We'll attack him at exit 40. But they got off at exit 35. They got off before the bandits were able to attack them. So the bandits said to them, whose Talmidim are you? Where did you learn that trick? That's an excellent trick. You have a very clever Rebbe. So they said, we're Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. Wow, that Rabbi Akiva is really great, and that's why he manages to stay protected, because he's so clever. He stays so far ahead of the game, so far ahead of our next move. Okay, Hashem, that was our last daf in the year Tafshin Ayin. Look forward to continuing learning Torah together in Tafshin Ayin Aleph. Chsiv v'chsimatov to everybody. Shkayach coming out late at night.